Hark and welcome to Flicking and Screaming. I'm Jed Sprague here with my co-host, Evan Fagundes.
Hey, everybody.
And this week, we are covering our top five favorite movies from A24.
Yes. And
you may have heard of them. Small little art house film studio. But first, Evan, as always, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Glad to be back for another week talking about great movies. And yeah, I know I say this every week, but I've been excited about this week a lot. I know this is a studio that we talk a lot about, so I'm looking forward to this one. How are you doing?
Oh man, I'm great. So many good movies this week.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. I mean, it was just like, it's such a pleasure to be able to like go and watch, you know, this type of movie nonstop.
Right.
You know, agreed. And I don't like, I will talk a little bit about, you know, what A24 movies mean in a bit. But you know, first, what did you watch this week? Anything outside of A24? Cause you know, I think it's pretty much a given. We watch a ton of A24 movies.
Right.
And I think, you know, every week we always say, oh, we don't want to step on our top five. So I think we should change this to maybe, hey, what did we watch outside of the context of our topic of discussion this week?
Yeah, fair enough. So I watched, like you said, a lot of A24, some A24 that I hadn't seen before, which was really cool. But as far as non A24 movies, I watched Kissing Booth 2. I know I talked about Kissing Booth 1 last week. had to complete the
had to run
series
it back.
There. Yeah, exactly. And then I also watched The Godfather with my mom. We hadn't seen it for a while. We're going to watch Godfather 2 together here soon as well. But that's one that I love to return to, like you would, you know, your favorite song or something like that. So
yeah,
that was kind of my non A24 for the week.
Nice. Yeah. My non A24 for this week. I rewatched a movie from last year that I really, really like, called The Girl in the Fog. It's an Italian, crime drama.
Mm-hmm.
That is so, so good.
Especially
for a first time director.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like it. You get over the, just like Parasite, you get over the subtitles really quickly,
right?
And just kind of get, you know, you dive into the story. And it's got one of the best plot twists of a movie that I've watched in a long time. I liked revisiting it, kind of knowing what was going to happen and kind of seeing how they had foreshadowed it throughout the movie. So that was good. And then the other movie I watched non A24 was a documentary called Koshien, Japan's Field of Dreams.
Ooh.
So this is an incredible, incredible documentary. About the Koshien baseball tournament in Japan, which is essentially the national high school baseball tournament.
Yeah.
And it is the most important thing, like in like one of the most important things in Japanese culture. And like these kids train all season long just to qualify for this, you know, this tournament. It's like, you know, imagine how we have like state tournaments and stuff in the United States, but it's the entire country. And it focuses on a couple of different teams and a couple of different coaches that have, you know, maybe one Koshien, quite a bit or you know, as a player back in the day, and they're now coaching you know, some of these kids. It explains what it means to them, and it's really cool, especially if you love baseball. It just kind of shows how passionate the Japanese people are about the sport and how much it means to them. So I that's a could not 10 out of 10 recommend, could not recommend that highly enough to anybody that loves baseball or good stories. Awesome. Well, with that being said, let's quickly, we have a guest for our top five this week, so we don't want to spend too much time. We're going to dive in pretty quick. But let's quickly talk about A24. And first and foremost, Evan, why did we choose to do A24 movies this week?
A24 movies, I think, are really cool because, you know, we talk often about, you know, what movies are or are not being made anymore. And I think A24 movies are very unique in that all of the movies are very different. You know, they make comedies, they make dramas, they make sci-fi movies, and they really give directors, especially young directors, who I think, you know, a lot of we talk about here, we really enjoy. They give them a lot of range to kind of expand on their ideas and really just kind of attack the ideas that they want to without having to worry about, you know, IP or, you know, too big a budget or anything like that. Like, they can just kind of do what they're going to do and have a good time doing it. And I think that comes across in the movies. They're really fun to watch.
Yeah, definitely. Like you said, it's such a range. When you say A24 movie, people kind of know what you mean, but it could mean a many different things. I think the number one, like the two things that I love most about A24 is, like you said, giving directors, especially young directors, a platform to tell their stories, not just to tell stories that are, you know, big IP projects that, you know, large studios want to try to make money off of, you know, really individual, often personal stories that these directors are trying to push. They give them the money to go do that. And then the other thing that I just love about A24 is it's like these movies are artful and important. You know, in the landscape of cinema today, because there's not enough of these type of movies being made anymore. Those are my favorite things about A24. Anything else that you particularly love about A24 as a studio?
As a studio, they, and it's part of why, you know, we made the joke last week about, you know, people feeling like they really know movies if they like A24 movies and really understand, like, you know, quote unquote high art.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that's one of the best things about A24 is that they let directors do, and sometimes it does come across as corny. Like, we're not going to say, you know, no studio is perfect. Not every movie that they're pumping out is awesome or a great movie. But they let directors and actors work with, you know, big ideas and just have a good time doing it, whether it's something like The Lighthouse or something like Locke, you know, in which Tom Hardy is just sitting in a car alone the whole time. You know, they do things that other studios are not doing right now. So I think that's, and it comes back to my original point, but they're just making different movies than we normally see being released in theaters. So I think that would be my favorite thing.
Yeah, I agree. It's so, so good. I'm very thankful for them. You know, there's a lot of jokes about, you know, sees one A24 movie.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, like, has a degree, you know, from film school. Yeah. Is a film critic. But I think, you know, maybe we'll get a little bit more into this, you know, during our top five.
Yeah.
But it does, like, help you understand film as, like, a form of art, not just as a form of pure entertainment. So I think that's really good for people that maybe are just getting into movies. They think they want to, you know, kind of take that next step. Like, hey, I really like movies, but I want to understand why. I want to talk about them more, dissect them more. A24 movies are a really good place to start that journey for a multitude of reasons.
I agree. And awesome. Last thing, I know we're about to jump into top five. Like you said, awesome guest. We want to leave enough time. Off the top of your head, and I know we didn't plan on this, but can you remember the first A24 movie, even if you didn't realize it was A24 until afterwards, that you watched and were like, wow, this is really cool and you may be unique?
Yeah, so I actually, spoiler alert, I'm gonna have that in my top five.
Okay.
So I'm gonna touch on that in my top five a little bit. What about you?
Mine is in my top five as well, and I know this is now great podcasting, we're both just kind of teasing stuff. Well, I'll say it right off the bat, mine is Ex Machina.
Okay.
It'll come up, we'll talk about it, but you know, at the time I didn't even realize it was A24, and I'm sure I'd seen others beforehand that I liked, but that was the first one that I was like, wow, I really need to look into this. And that was relatively early on in A24, you know, it was in the first like 3-4 years, so pretty early on, not super well known at the time. But yeah, I always thought that was a cool. That was the first time I was like, I need to start checking out movies from these people.
Yep. All right. Little peek behind the curtain there.
Yes.
Now it's time for our top fives with a very, very, very special guest and a great friend of the show. So we're going to transition over to that. Okay. Now it is time for top five. Joining us this week, we may be the best friend of the pod, some might say. Some people know him as JT, others as Chip. I know him as an international man of mystery, but good friend of the pod and on Twitter at Chip Off Your Block. Please welcome to the show, Chip. How are we doing today?
I'm feeling great. I am happy and honored to be here with you gentlemen. Jed, Evan, I've been looking forward to this since you guys announced this was happening, since the pod was happening. I was like, you know what? I want to get on here and talk with these guys.
Yeah, this was an early, early decision. We were like, Chip, like, just name your episode. And this was the one, A24. You heard about it, and you were like, in the Cool Kids Studio, as you so dubbed it.
Absolutely. The vibes are right here. I mean, this is the vibey studio. Mm-hmm. So we're here.
Yeah, no, I agree.
We all think we're smarter than we are. So I think this is the perfect trio for this set of movies. I think you kind of have to go into it with that mindset to really get into A24 movies.
Yes, the movie hipster studio, as I like to call it.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, before we dive in, Chip, you've listened to the show before. Just give us the quick rundown. What's your relationship with film? We got to know so we have context for your list.
Oh, man. I remember there was a day, I was probably 9th or 10th grade, where I watched Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs in the same day, and it changed my entire life. I was too young to like fully get all the references and really understand how important those movies were, but I was like, hey, something's different about these movies. This is a level above the superhero movies I watched as a kid and animated Disney movies. There's something different here, and that's when I was like, hey, movies are going to be my thing. And here we are now. Finally, it's all just been leading up to this, really, since that day. It's leading to this podcast.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that. With that being said,
Dogs and Pulp, what a day.
Yeah,
man.
What a day. Gotta say.
Honestly.
That's gorgeous. I love that.
Yeah. What you guys are going to, I think, clearly learn is Evan and Chip are kindred spirits when it comes to their taste in movies.
Yeah, really are. It's scary.
Yeah. I'm outnumbered on this podcast, people.
That's how
I am outnumbered.
That's how we first started chatting, is just because we'd both be tweeting about the same movies. And it was like, exactly. Oh, somebody else likes this movie? All right.
That's what we want to do on this podcast. Yeah. We want more Chips. We want more best friends of the pod. We need a community around this podcast, people.
Yes.
Hit us up. Okay. It's time to jump into our top five lists of our favorite A24 movies.
Yes.
And because he is the guest, I think Chip should go first.
100%.
I'm going first. You're throwing it on me first.
100%.
Hit us with your fifth favorite movie from A24.
I would love to. My number five is a movie called First Reformed.
Ooh, yes. Okay, so I have this a little higher.
A little higher. Great. We can save it then, because I know that's what we do here.
I'm going to let you take that, the lead off when we get there, but wow, what a start. Let's fucking go.
Yeah, honestly.
I have a feeling that our fours and fives, there might be a couple where it's like, it definitely is higher. We might zoom through these pretty quick.
Yeah. Oh my God. What a start. I'm juiced. Let's go. First Reformed. Okay. Beautiful.
All right.
Jed, you want to go second?
Yeah. I'll go.
I went before you last week. Yeah. Go ahead.
I'll go. Okay. So my number five is Uncut Gems.
Nice.
Yes. Nice. Does anybody have this on my list? This is later on my list.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect.
Okay. There we go. Great. I love
Evan,
it.
Evan, we're moving.
I will say not to spoil. Well, no, this is actually great because you're only letting me do three honorable mentions. I had four written down. One of them was Uncut Gems. So that was my number six. So beautiful. We're going to get to talk about it. I'm so glad.
Perfect.
So my number five is Ex Machina.
Oh,
cricket.
Good choice.
Okay.
I think we're free. We're safe.
Okay.
100%. Oh my God. We could talk about a movie finally. Yeah. Thank God.
Third is first. Okay. Here we go. Ex Machina at number five. It's from 2014. It's a science fiction psychological thriller written and directed by Alex Garland. Just a couple. It only has a few people in the movie, really. It's Domhnall Gleeson, Alicia Vikander, and Oscar Isaac. We'll say right off the bat, the performances are the first things that I think about.
The first thing you think about is how beautiful Oscar Isaac is. This is an Oscar Isaac podcast.
You jumped the gun on me because the first note that I have is Oscar Isaac. Wow, so handsome. Oscar Isaac is so fucking good looking. It's startling in this movie. He has the beard. Gleason, who lots of people might recognize from a pretty great episode of Black Mirror, is in it, does a great job. And Alicia Vikander as the AI in the movie is so good. This is, I will say, the one note that I wanted to make on this movie. It's very beautiful. The visuals are so beautiful that it's almost creates that sense of dread that you have. You know, it's set in the forest in this gorgeous home, and really makes you feel uneasy all along. And I will say this is when I first felt like, you know, auteur type movies, like I get it. Yeah, and it goes right along with it. That's why I had it first on my list, it's at number five, but I wanted to talk about it first because we're talking about A24 and feeling like you really know, you know, what movies mean and why they're important. This is one of the first movies that I was like, ooh, I'm in on the joke a little bit here. I get what you're going for.
Yeah. This movie definitely fits in with what we were talking about earlier, which is, you know, A24 giving directors like this a platform to just do their thing.
Right.
You know, which is what makes this studio so special. Yeah. Awesome. Number five.
Thank you.
Ex Machina.
Yes.
All right, Chip. Number four. Hit us.
I'm really excited to see what you guys think about this one, because my number four is The Last Black Man in San Francisco.
Nice.
Higher on my list.
Higher on your list.
Okay.
I had a feeling because of the local connections.
Yes. Yeah. Higher on my list. Wow. Yes.
Unbelievable.
Okay. My number four, I think it is going to be the biggest curveball of this entire list. My number four is The Spectacular Now.
Whoa.
Nice. I
2013. Yeah, directed by James Ponsoldt, starring Miles Teller, Shailene Woodley, Brie Larson, and Kyle Chandler. So a couple reasons this hits my list. This is the first A24 movie that I ever saw.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first indie movie that I raised my hand and said, I care about this movie. This movie is important to me. The unreal dynamic between Shailene Woodley and Miles Teller. Mm-hmm. I mean, oh my God. Oh my God. And they're both, you know, obviously Woodley had done Secret Life of the American Teenager before, so she was kind of more in the consciousness of the American public than Teller was, but this is kind of an early Teller, which I think he's an incredible actor. Super sad movie and kind of a interesting ending. Have you guys both seen this movie? I know you have. Yes. I think I've recommended it to you. Chip,
I have
you
not
seen
this movie. I have not. I'm on the outside here.
Yeah, so it's got an interesting kind of up for interpretation ending, but really what it is, it's just like a high school kind of rom-drom. I saw it in high school, and it was really important to me at the time because it connected with me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's maybe because I spent my high school years staring out of windows and listening to music and wishing my life was more like music videos and movies. And so this really connected with me because it was like real enough where I could make that connection, but also just fictional enough where it still felt like a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love this movie.
Great.
If you haven't seen it, go check it out. It's a really, really easy watch, breezy.
Yeah.
And
how super, about this little look behind the curtain of Flicking and Screaming? You know, I feel like we're commenting a lot on me really pushing movies on you. I get very aggressive about making people watch movies that I like. This was the first movie that you told me to watch that I'd actually never heard of last year.
Oh yeah. And I think I pushed this really aggressively
We went out to lunch and I believe three straight times you said, have you seen The Spectacular Now yet? And I hadn't.
Yeah.
And
I think
finally,
this is one of those.
Yeah.
Finally. Yeah. Like I said, it's great. The first indie movie where now I, you know, having, you know, being more of what I consider a movie person, more mm-hmm. of a cinephile now, there are more movies that I like really ride for
mm-hmm.
where I like take them. They become a part of my personality, my being.
Yeah.
This was the first one that I was like, I'm going to tell everybody I fucking know that if you haven't watched this movie, we can't be friends.
Yeah.
So The Spectacular Now.
Great
big curveball, but important to me. All right, Evan, number four for you.
My number four is The Witch, and it's from 2015, written and directed by Robert Eggers. I'm so glad we get to talk about some scary movies. It's a horror story that's set in New England, basically in the 17th century, surrounding a Puritan family. The first thing that I think about when I think about this movie, one, is being scared out of my mind. My father and I watched this for the first time a few years ago. And it was just the two of us in the house. We finished watching it at, I don't know, like midnight. And we both just kind of looked at each other like, so do we have to go to bed now? Like in separate Jesus. Rooms? It was horrifying. And the horror to me comes from, well, it's really minimalist at its core. But the score, the shots, the camera is very still, which is not common in a horror. Often in horror movies, the camera is whipping around corners. And, you know, you're kind of, maybe like you're looking in the direction of a character and then suddenly you're behind the character. It's kind of the jump scare type tactic. They do not do that in this. The camera's basically just sitting there in the middle of the screen with actors moving around the whole time. The score is very kind of quiet and suspenseful. Mm-hmm. And this is the king of, and my favorite type of horror movie, just the fear of the unknown. Kind of, this is very simple in that, you know, it's like, what can be out there in the woods? That, to me, that's terrifying, even more terrifying than, you know, an actual monster that comes into a town and starts, you know, killing people in their sleep or whatever. Just very horrifying movie. Robert Eggers is awesome. He went back and looked at like old English biblical speech patterns, and all the characters speak that way. And then the only scene that I wanted to mention, and I'd love to hear if either you guys have some thoughts on this movie, but the scene when the main character is, I don't know, maybe like a 15-year-old girl, and she's playing peekaboo with her baby sister, and she closes her eyes for legitimately 4 seconds, opens her eyes again, and the baby's gone, and then it pans up to the woods, and you don't see anything scary in the scene, but I just remember that being burned into my memory. This movie is very horrifying and very good.
Yeah, so I'm not a huge fan of scary movies, as I've talked about on this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I like ones with good stories. Mm-hmm. Like this is a good one, but they hit me really hard. And like you're saying, you and your dad sitting there, we have to go to bed now.
Yeah.
My routine is I always just throw on Friends after I watch a scary movie, mm-hmm. just because I watch like 2 or 3 episodes, and it basically just like reminds me that the world is okay. But
yeah,
this movie was, I remember, one of the first scary movies I'd seen in a long time, where I was like, fuck, like, that's just a good ass movie. Like, it's not mm-hmm. it's not a scary movie. It is a good movie that is scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. I think this is a great movie. And I personally like Eggers' other A24 movie.
I hear you.
A little bit better.
I hear you.
But I'll let Chip get his thoughts on this movie out. Please. Before we go down that road.
I'm with you that I think The Lighthouse is a little better. I think The Witch is scarier.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. I think that I left the theater mm-hmm. far more terrified because of The Witch.
Yeah.
And I think that the fear I experienced, I definitely get what you're saying, Evan, that like the fear of the unknown. But I also think there's a really physical fear within that family of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you have that super like patriarchal system that they're in.
Yeah.
And there's this puritanical, like legalistic fear. And it's all about obedience and disobedience and this blind devotion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, really horrifying. And that just manifests itself in these family arguments and in that tension. And I think the way that Eggers builds that up and develops those characters is really unique and powerful and horrifying.
Agreed. And you know, along those lines, and this is going to be, wow, reference King. It Comes at Night, another A24 film that didn't quite make my list, but is a wonderful movie. Same thing. It's kind of like the fear that's outside of the home causing anxiety and fear within the home. And I think that's a really interesting idea, showing that like how outside forces, even if they're unseen and unknown, can affect, people basically terrorizing each other. I think that's a great idea. I love that observation, because that's exactly right. There is definitely, you know, horror in this movie that is shown on screen, and that's the control and anxiety placed within the family.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, we were going to talk about The Lighthouse here, but I've made the executive decision as the commissioner of Flicking and Screaming that we're having Chip back to do an entire Lighthouse podcast.
Absolutely.
So that we
need to do a whole podcast on the Lighthouse.
Yes, and we're not going to sully that discussion with too much in-depth on The Lighthouse here, because it does deserve its own discussion. So with that being said, Chip, hit me with your third favorite A24 movie.
All right, my number 3. It's a little movie called Moonlight.
Nice.
Also my number 3.
I'm so glad we're
good.
Yes. Okay, good.
Okay.
Perfect. Do you want me to intro it then?
Yeah, intro it, please.
You need one. Awesome. Yes.
I think that, you know, looking at the history of A24, you kind of have it jumping off of Spring Breakers, and that's what like introduces it to the world. It's very mm-hmm. controversial. But Moonlight is it's the peak of A24, at least to this point, right?
Yeah.
With winning Best Picture. I think it's an incredible movie. I think it's the best cast movie ever. And by that, I mean, you've got the 3 different actors for Kevin and Chiron throughout their journey. But then with Mahershala Ali, who got the Oscar,
mm-hmm.
Janelle Monáe, shout out Kansas City, the motherland, Naomi Harris.
Yes.
It's like the emotions that they bring to the screen with their line delivery, their energy on screen. It's you genuinely feel it. And that's such a cliche to say, but you can feel that just coming off of the screen,
mm-hmm.
like the more disturbing moments with his mom to the comforting mm-hmm. moments that Mahershala's character, you know, on the beach at the dinner table, having those really tough conversations. it's just incredible, and it just brings you in. It enraptures you in these characters' lives. I mean, what a moment for it to win Best Picture, especially in the way it did.
Yeah, I actually like the way it did, because it was just like La La Land was such this like, and I like that movie, but it's like such a pretentious like old Hollywood pick, and La La Land having to stand up there and be like, Moonlight won Best Picture, was incredible. Couple things about this movie. The reason it is number three on my list. I think this term gets thrown around a lot, but I really do think that it, like when people say it about this movie, I think it's deserving. This is an important movie. Mm-hmm. This is a movie that I think people need to watch because it brings up a lot about race and inequality. It brings up a lot about sexuality. And growing up in an environment that's not accepting of like who family. You are. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just the way that the story's told, like through those kind of the three distinct parts, and how you can kind of see that character, like you do miss chunks, but you just see that development so, so clearly. Couple other things. One, shots and more shots.
Yes.
It is literally just like, I'm a photographer, and it's like just a masterclass in beautiful, beautiful, beautiful images. Mm-hmm. Like this, like Barry Jenkins is a fucking god.
Yep.
He's a fucking god. I love this movie so much. I think there's a lot of scenes that are really good, but like, again, because I'm a shots whore, that scene with Mahershala Ali, you know, when he's floating him in the water is like so beautiful and so touching, and there's a lot going on there without too many words being said. And like I said, I think just it's a extremely important movie. Evan, I know this isn't on your list, but I think you need to talk about this movie.
It's in my honorable mentions. This was the one that I really had the most. It hurt my heart so much not to put it in, and I honestly can't even explain exactly why I didn't. I love this movie so much. I think it just is a testament to how many good movies that A24 has. Mahershala Ali in this movie is one of my favorite performances of all time. You know, when I start thinking about my favorite supporting actor performances, you know, obviously I say it on almost every podcast now, but like I think of Robert Duvall in The Godfather and Godfather 2. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of get to Mahershala Ali in Moonlight. I will every once in a while just turn on YouTube clips of this movie. I don't do that for many movies, especially ones like this that are a lot of people in rooms talking. But I will throw on random, you know, 6-minute clips of Moonlight on YouTube just to kind of like get a fix and be in the world. And like you said, Barry Jenkins, I could not be more juiced to see anything that he has coming out in, you know, the near future. I'm so glad you guys put this on your list. I love this movie a lot too. I don't think you guys both put it incredibly well. We could probably do a whole podcast on that movie as well, but
yeah, it's so, so good. Probably one of the most like in the last few years, like I think it's just a landmark moment, obviously for the studio. I think a landmark moment for the Academy in like selecting it as Best Picture. And it's so it's such a classic movie, but it's like so topical for what's going on in America over the last, you know, few years. Mm-hmm. So I really, really do love this movie.
Yeah.
All right.
Great picks.
Chip, that's yours and my number three.
Yeah.
Love that we're on the same page there. Efficiency. Evan, what's your number three?
So my number three, and I'm going to share this one with Chip because he had it at number five. My number three is First Reformed. And Chip, I want you to lead us off because we got to give you some time. You had to share both four and five. So hit us with the First Reformed.
Oh, you're far too kind. First Reformed, Ethan Hawke.
Yes.
First of all, Ethan Hawke. Jesus oh my Christ. God. He gives the performance of a lifetime.
Yes.
He is playing a pastor who's struggling with alcoholism, the loss of his son, separation from his wife, lack of communication and any sort of prayer with God, and the rapidly decaying world around him, and everything is crumbling for him. It's directed by Paul Schrader, who has written many movies, but in particular, a little film called Taxi Driver.
Yep.
And you can see so many parallels to that film in this one, but he twists it in such a way to set it in this rural Buffalo Tourist Shop Church. Mm-hmm. I think it's Ethan Hawke's best performance ever.
Yes.
I love that it's shot in 4:3.
Yes.
I love movies like that. So similar to The Lighthouse, which we'll not talk about. It talks about climate change and the church's role in the destruction of our world. It has one of the best third acts of any movie ever. Yeah. It just sucker punches you out of nowhere.
Yep.
And it's really haunting and really beautiful. And I haven't stopped thinking about it since I saw it.
I could not have said it better myself. Could not agree more. Ethan Hawke, really quick though, Amanda Seyfried and Cedric the Entertainer are the other two top billers on this movie.
Yes.
Incredible performances. I'm a huge Amanda Seyfried fan, and I don't think she's gotten her due. I think movies for people like her, you know, we say this every week now, but just aren't quite getting made anymore because she's not quite that, like, traditional Meg Ryan type leading lady. She has a little bit of weird in her, and I think Ethan Hawke does too. But she is so perfect in this role. The scenes with her and Ethan Hawke are, I mean, they're heart-wrenching, while also almost having the same sense of, like, exhilaration as you know, fucking Mad Max or something like that. Like, they're doing crazy things, and it's very almost, this sounds like a bad thing, but they're almost out of place when they are meeting and conversating and interacting in the movie. It's almost like a completely different movie, but it works. It reminds me a little bit of, and some, again, some people might take it as a little bit of a knock, but it reminds me of, like, almost Oliver North when they're together. Like, suddenly we're doing jump cuts and kind of weird things, and suddenly we have a green screen with, you know, we're flying over the Alps, and you're just like, what the hell is going on? You know, I could go on about this movie forever. It is one of those that you finish the movie and you sit there for 15 minutes, you watch the whole credits, and you're just like, what the fuck is going on here? I need more answers. You're kind of Googling to see if, you know, Paul Schrader said anything more about the movie and how it might have looked after the credits. And one scene that I have to bring up, there's a scene, the camera in this movie, and Chip, I love that you said it's Ethan Hawke's best performance. I could not agree more. I could not believe he was not nominated for an Oscar. The camera is unflinching. It sits there incredibly still. It sits there about a foot in front of the faces of the actors that it's showing on screen, and it does not move. It sits there for, you know, 45, 50, 60 seconds at a time while people are just reacting. And there's one scene when he walks in, sits down in an empty church while a youth choir is singing a song. It's the most mundane, middle of the Tuesday church choir practicing scene ever. And there's about a 45-second scene of him sitting there looking like he's about to break down crying. And I thought he said more in that scene than he could have said in a 10-minute monologue. And I know I went on a little rant there, but Ethan Hawke is incredible in this movie.
You're exactly right.
Love it. Awesome. There you go.
All right.
Number three. It's time, Chip. What is your number two?
Number two.
My number two, it's Lady Bird.
Yes. You can't. Me too.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Higher.
Okay. I was like one of
them. I mean, you guys, come on. You knew. I mean, we're going to spoil it. Lady Bird's my number one, and we're going to talk about it when we get there. I fucking love this movie. It's so good.
Go for your number two.
Yes. Jed, go for number two, and then we're just about to have a big bro off on Lady Bird.
Yes. All right. So, real quick. My number two, Chip, this is also on your list. My number two is The Last Black Man in San Francisco.
Nice.
Yes.
Dude, this movie is so good. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. This has been a movie that has been on my list. I need to watch it for a long time. I watched it for the first time last night, and it blew me away so much to the point where it is now number two on my list.
Wow.
Is there an element of recency bias? Yes. Is there an element of geographical bias? Yes. Do I give two fucks about either of those things? No. This movie's incredible. Directed by Jonathan Talbot. He won Best Director at Sundance. Starring Jimmy Fails, Jonathan Majors, Danny Glover. Semi-autobiographical. Jimmy Fails, the actor, plays himself. This movie's based on parts of his real life. And Talbot is his best friend from growing up. This is an extremely personal movie about changing American cities. It's a love story between a man and a house. It's about nostalgia, holding on to the past, even if that idea of the past isn't true. It's about obsession and what happens when you pour yourself into everything, about feeling connected to something bigger than yourself, about friendship being the family that you choose. Again, shots, shots, and more fucking shots. This has the best final shot of a movie I've seen in so, so long. Like, it is the most mind-blowingly beautiful thing I've ever seen. And I know I just went really quick there, but a couple things. Two quotes that really, really stand with me from this movie. One, people aren't one thing. Talking about complexities and how, you know, what you put out to some people and what you put out to other people, that doesn't define who you are. You know, who you are is a mix of all these different types of things. When that line was said last night, I was in full tears. I identify with that so much. Like, trying to figure out who you are when you feel like your personality is a mishmash of like a bunch of different stereotypical personalities. And two, you don't get to hate San Francisco unless you love it. It is such a good line. He's sitting on the bus and there are these two, for those of you that don't live in San Francisco, it is a very gentrified area now, with a lot of people that work in the technology industry. And these two, you know, tech girls are bitching about the city and complaining and just saying how much they fucking hate it and they should just move to LA. And Jimmy Fails goes, you don't get to hate San Francisco. And they're both like, laugh at him, you know, whatever. And he goes, you don't get to hate San Francisco unless you love it. And I was like, fuck yeah, Jimmy Fails. This movie's so good. I'm looking forward. I think Jimmy Fails, even though obviously playing himself, I think it's an incredible role. I think he's going to have a successful career beyond this. He gives an awesome performance. Danny Glover was really good in this movie. Jonathan Talbot's got a great future ahead of him. His eye for shots and storytelling is really unique and incredible. And lastly, Jonathan Majors is going to be a huge actor. That's just, there's no two ways about it. I've seen him in probably like three or four things now. Not in any starring roles, always in supporting. But he's doing such different things in every role that I've seen him in. He's going to be one of the best character actors of his generation. I just can't see a way that goes differently. He's so fucking good. So I love this movie. I rambled on. Chip, I know this is also on your list. Please tell me how much you love this movie.
I love this movie. I couldn't agree more, especially about Jonathan Majors. It's insane to me. Like, if you go to his Wikipedia page right now, there's not even a picture. He is still riding pretty low. He was into Five Bloods, and he was great. He's in the new HBO horror show. It's coming out this month. But he's still under the radar, and he is going to explode, I think, very, very soon. And for good reason. I think that the chemistry that him and Jimmy Fails have was just palpable. I thought that their kind of brother relationship was just – it was so tender, you know, and very raw and beautiful to watch. And I'd want to echo what you said about the shots as well. There's so many vertical shots with using the skateboard kind of as a motif almost, as he's, you know, going up and down the hills. Just like he's like in line with a streetcar. He's, you know, zipping past the bay, as you can see, like how gentrification has literally ruined the bay area and the water. And I think that visual language that Talbot's using is really, really special.
Yeah, you know what's funny is there's so many movies nowadays, even like great movies, where like the B-roll footage when nothing's happening is so thrown away, right? It's just so stereotypical, like, hey, let's just show a shot of the city. Hey, you know, let's show a shot of the landscape. There's so much attention to detail with every single minute of this movie visually from front to back. And the score is incredible. Like you talked about the tender relationship, you know, between Majors and Jimmy Fails. And I think the score really like amplifies that, that tenderness. It's a, like you said, it's a brotherhood. It's a friendship, but, it's a friendship that you can only reach that level when you've been through something together. And when you feel like you are the only two people that, actually understand each other. So fuck, what a movie. I'm having like heart palpitations right now talking about it. It's so good. It's so good.
No doubt.
So, all right, Evan, that being said, what is your number two A24 movie?
My number two is Lady Bird. So we're saving that one. So I think we're at
we're at my number
one. No, Chip's got to give us his number one.
No. Oh, yes, yeah, you're right. You're right.
Give us number
yeah,
two.
You're right. Yeah. You're right.
Chip, run it.
My number one, I think for those that know me, this is not going to be a surprise at all. It's Uncut Gems.
Yes. I'm so glad we're going to get to talk about this.
Yes. So this is my number five. Evan, was this on your list?
No, this was in my honorable mentions as well. It hurt me, but yes.
I love is we're about to have like two lengthy discussions on two movies that are very important to me.
And then I'm going to get to sandwich it with my little rant.
Yes. Go ahead. All right.
Uncut Gems.
Uncut Gems. Okay, so I want to – my friend Isaiah on Twitter, he said it is the first period piece about the 2010s.
Woo.
And when he said that, that blew my freaking mind. I couldn't agree more. From the ugly textured iPhone keyboard that Howie is sexting from to every moment of Trilogy Weekend with that hair to Doc Rivers' actual voice in the Celtics locker room. It's a perfect collection of late high school memories for people like us.
Yes.
It's Adam Sandler's best role ever. It's the Safdie's best film yet. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to see what they're going to do next, but it's a masterpiece. It is a technical masterpiece of sound design, the layers and layers of the audio tracks, of the background noise, the chaos of the Diamond District. It is a hyper realistic clusterfuck. And I get
clusterfuck is the best word to describe this movie. It is so stressful from like end to end.
Why that bothers some people, but for me, it's like comfort food. Yeah. It's like Campbell's soup I can just come back to over and over again. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Anything else that you have to say on this movie? Man. The floor is yours, Chip.
The cast. I mean, Garnett's perfect, mm-hmm. and he's actually a good actor. Mm-hmm. Mike Francesa is in this movie, and he's a bookie, and that is so meta, it hurts me. Eric Bogosian is perfect as Arnold. Yes. The third act, when he's coming around to Howie and like seeing how things are working, great acting. Keith Williams Richards is Phil. Mm-hmm. And if you guys don't know, like if you're listening to this podcast, Google Keith Williams Richards because his story is insane. The Weeknd, Lakeith Stanfield, Idina Menzel, Judd Hirsch, Trinidad James is in this movie, guys. Trinidad James is in this fucking movie. And then, of course, Adam Sandler. No one else could provide. No one else could extract this amount of sympathy from such an unsympathetic character from the audience.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then my wife, Julia Fox.
I was going to say, where's Julia?
The goat. Oh, my God. She is beautiful. She is an amazing actress. She steals every scene. I think it's one – I'm not going to spoil it. It's not one of the best – I think it's one of the best endings ever. As well. It's perfect.
Let's dive in on that for a second because I actually put this on my – when I put on my list, one of the highlights I said is divisive ending, very divisive. And I want to know where everyone stands on this. So you think it's one of the best endings ever?
Me too.
And you too?
Yes, 100%.
Oh, we're all in agreement because I think that that was the only right way to end that movie. Because I think it almost does a disservice to the movie to end it the other way it could have gone.
Sure.
Yes.
So I'm glad we're on that. Well, that was a quicker discussion than we had. All right, quickly, Chip. I'm a little angry at you. You said Lakeith Stanfield's name really fast. This is a Lakeith Stanfield podcast.
You're right. Okay? You're right. Call
That's
me out.
True. That's
yes.
true.
You need to zoom in. This is a performance and a half
from
Lakeith Stanfield. Without him, this movie doesn't work because that dynamic, you need to believe him throughout this whole movie and believe his motivations to really like make Sandler's panic like set in to your own chest. This movie, like I said earlier, nonstop ride end-to-end. I felt it in my chest like the entire time I've watched it. Like you said, the music. This is a very loud movie.
Oh,
it's so loud and it works. Everything about it. I like knowing the Safdie brothers. Everything about it was super intentional, right? Every single ingredient of this movie is made to get you to feel the chaos that's going on in Sandler's character's life, right? Like that's in Howard Ratner's life. Like that's the entire point of everything that they do. And then we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about, this is probably one of the biggest Oscar snubs of recent memory, right? Yeah. Like I'm not sitting here and telling you it should have won, but like it should have been nominated for Best Picture. Sandler should have been nominated for Best Actor, and the Safdie brothers probably should have gotten some kind of nod.
Mm-hmm.
Agree?
Something. Yes. It's wild that it didn't even get nominated for anything. Like, I just don't even understand how that can
sound
happen.
Sound mixing.
Sound like, mixing is automatic. Yeah. I've never
costume
heard
design, production design.
Yeah, the costumes too. Unbelievable. Yeah. I actually recently seen the pictures of Sandler floating around out there. It's unbelievable. He's off the rails.
Yeah, I love this movie. Evan, I know it's not on your list, but I know you are passionate about this movie. So give me 30 seconds.
Yeah, 30 seconds. On Uncut Gems. I mean, you guys summed it up really well. The Safdies are just and talk about divisive. There are a lot of people out there who really think they're garbage. I could not disagree more. I think they create a certain sense of anxiety, but it's earned. It's earned in a story that you actually care about, in characters that you care about. You know, I can see when people say that about movies and filmmakers that don't really care about their characters and how they formulate their thoughts and why they do things. But I think the Safdies really care about that. And then they're also like, we're also going to have you piss your pants. You know, so I think if you do both things at the same time, I can really respect that. Like you guys said, unbelievable performances, unbelievable sound mixing. Lakeith Stanfield, have to mention him again. I think he's so awesome in this, especially considering his other role this last year was in Knives Out, which is like literally the complete opposite character or type of character. But yeah, I'm so glad you guys chose this. This is a wonderful movie.
Yeah, great movie. Okay. Yes. On to my number one, the least surprising pick of all time.
Yeah.
Because I think I tweet buy to try weekly about this movie and how much I love this movie. It's Lady Bird. I know this is both of your guys' number two. I'm really mad about that.
I know.
There's only one position for Lady Bird, and it's at the top.
Remember last week you even said we're gonna do our A24 top fives, or more like Lady Bird in 2 through 5.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So a couple of things I love about this movie. We've talked about it quite a bit. Obviously, Greta Gerwig, Saoirse Ronan, Timothy Chalamet, Lucas Hedges, Beanie Feldstein, all incredible people. I'm still standing on the pillar that we will do a full podcast on this. The love letter to Sacramento, but more importantly, the thing that hits me most about this movie is a love letter to a time in life that is hard but formative. And you can only realize that it's an important, like, in everything that you went through, negative and positive, is important with hindsight. It's really hard, like, knowing when you're in it. That's why I keep returning to this movie, is because every time I watch it, I think of something different. I think that's what this movie captures the best is, you know, she gets to college and she starts to experience that beginning part of that feeling where she's like, man, everything I went through has kind of led me to who I am, and like all these, you know, rebelling against my parents and going by a different name, and, you know, having a boyfriend that was cheating on me with a man, and, you know, trying to, you're not being great at school, but trying to fit in and realizing that your true friends weren't the ones that you, you know, necessarily wanted them to be. Everything led her like that to believe that, like, hey, you know, I am who I am, and that's just okay. And she was just getting to the beginning of that. And I think that's a slow burn that comes as you, you know, maybe get through college, you know, into young adulthood. Fuck, this movie's so good. I mean, this is like I said, this is my second favorite movie of all time. It's borderline my first favorite movie of all time. It means a lot to me. Like I said, I'm really mad that it's not your guys' number one.
You know, one thing that I will say to really sum, it's a perfect movie, and that, you know, I don't say that lightly. There is not one thing that Greta Gerwig could have done differently, I don't think, to make this movie better. The way it's paced, the people that it stars, the dialogue, the writing, the staging. I legitimately think she made the best possible movie that she could make with that script.
Yeah, I think we're going to look back. Obviously, it's a very personal story for Greta Gerwig. It's kind of like semi, you know, autobiographical. My top two movies apparently are semi-autobiographical from the people that made it, which I don't know what that says about me. But I think we're going to look back on this movie with
real life truth.
Yeah. With Gerwig directing, with the stars, Ronan, Chalamet, Beanie Feldstein, Lucas Hedges. We're all on record as saying that we think these are, you know, an incredible generation of young actors that are coming up. I think we're going to look back on this movie and it's going to be something that we look at almost as like the outsiders. You know how like we look at that cast and we're like, damn, look at all this young talent that was accumulated together to create this incredible movie. I think there's a better movie than that. Also because it's an original story.
Oh, for sure. Better movie.
But I'm saying, like, when you look at that cast, and I just think this is going to be an important movie.
Yeah.
Moving forward. And again, region bias. We grew up right next to Sacramento.
Yeah.
And you know, that's okay. You can't, 100%. That's why we always ask how people come to these lists, how they approach it. Cause there's no such thing in the entire world as unbiased.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm very biased towards Lady Bird.
100%. Okay. And we are heavily on the record about Lady Bird. Chip, I want to hear from you. I don't think we've ever talked Lady Bird. Give us some thoughts.
Yeah. Well, to kind of jump off of your bias point, Lady Bird maybe was not made for me, but I can still connect with every single one of those characters in a different way. Yes. I grew up in a toxic lower middle class household. I went to a rich private school, not because I had money, but because of scholarships. So I can see myself in each of these characters. I've been the Danny character. I've been the Kyle character. I don't look as good as Timmy Chalamet, but I've been Kyle. I've been Lady Bird. I've been Julie. There's little pockets of my life that are weirdly, scarily represented in this movie. Mm-hmm. And I'll fully admit that makes me biased towards it. But I just watched this movie, and it's the same with Little Women. But when I watch a Greta Gerwig movie, I just have the dumbest smile on my face the entire time.
God. Yeah.
That's and the perfect way to put it.
It's the emotions that come out in the characters, the emotions in how she edits her movies with jumping back and forth in these little pockets of conversation and glimpses of life, good and bad. It just makes me smile. It makes me cry. It gives me a lot of life. I think that... I think Greta and Saoirse are De Niro and Scorsese.
Yes.
I think they're going to be making movies for 60 years. We're going to be in the nursing home, and we're going to see what Greta Gerwig's Irishman looks like with Saoirse Ronan.
I need it.
I can't fucking wait.
Oh, my God, Chip. That just made me happy. Like, I have the biggest smile on my face right now. Like, that is
– throw Timmy in there for good measure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on. He can keep hanging out.
No, you won't be able to be in that movie, though.
5 pounds.
You know how they had the de-aging for the Irishman?
Yeah.
They're going to have to age Timothy Chalamet to be in that movie because he's gonna look so...
When he's like 80.
Exactly.
Oh, man. All right.
Lady Bird, the most important movie of all time, the best movie ever.
Yeah.
Nobody can say that I'm wrong or that Chip is wrong. It's so good. Evan, it's time for your number one that is completely mistaken because it's not Lady Bird.
I know. And I'm really interested. I feel like you guys are going to be surprised about this one. But this is a movie that since the first time that I saw it a few years ago to the last time that I saw it, which was about a month ago, I think about almost every day. And that's The Lobster. Before I start, have you guys both seen The Lobster?
No. That's number one. Like, that's like up there on my hit list, but I've heard so many good things. And when researching this, like looking, like seeking out the movies that I haven't watched, I watched a lot of new A24 movies that I hadn't seen. And The Lobster was like that one where I was like, it just was the one I couldn't quite get over the line, partially because, you know, every time I watch a movie, I also have to show every trailer to my fiance and she's like, yes, yes, no, yes.
Yeah.
And this was just the one that didn't quite make the cut. But the fact that it's number one on your list makes me immediately want to go watch it.
Yeah.
See, it makes me want to rewatch it because I saw it around the time it came out and I didn't love it.
Okay.
I thought that it was a really interesting premise. I thought it started well. And then when they left the first location, I don't want to spoil it. When they left the first location, I just, my interest kind of fell off. I think that it's funny. I think that I'm going to crap all over your number one. I'm really sorry. I think that it's just a little bit, some of the performances are a little bit bland and a little monotone for me, but I also get that's what he's going for. That's what, I don't know how to pronounce his name, but that's kind of the director's style, that deadpan, right on that line. So please tell me why I'm wrong.
Allow me to try to turn you. So my number one, The Lobster, it came out in 2015. It was directed and co-written by Yorgos Lanthimos. He's a Greek filmmaker. I love all of his movies so much. He made Killing of a Sacred Deer, also an A24 movie on my honorable mentions. Very good horror film. The Lobster is... it's a slow burn. I completely agree. The first time that I saw it was actually, I believe, in theaters. And I did not walk out of it saying, oh, that's one of the best movies that I've ever seen. And I've seen it probably 3 times since. And it is cracking my top 10 almost of all time at this point. It stars Colin Farrell, Rachel Weisz, John C. Reilly, Olivia Colman. Has a wonderful cast. And it is. It's a dystopian black comedy that's set in a world in which single people either find a partner that they share a commonality with, either a personality trait or like a physical trait. They either find a partner or they get turned into an animal. And at one point, Colin Farrell's character chooses a lobster. If he's ever going to be turned, he's going to be a lobster. And he's roundly laughed at by John C. Reilly and other characters. But this movie is so weird. It's very weird. And Yorgos Lanthimos, Chip said it perfectly. His characters do not speak like real character, like real people. He readily admits that he creates his own world. His world looks and feels like our world, but I think if you asked him, he would say it's on a completely different planet in a completely different universe. I don't think he's trying to create a weird Earth. I think he's literally like, this could be on Mars with people who look like people on Earth. And I really respect his commitment to that. You could call it a bit, whatever. I respect his commitment to that and his lack of explanation. He doesn't do a whole world building. It's not Marvel where they're like, this happened first. And then Thanos was born to Mama Thanos. And then, you know, like there's no mythology surrounding his characters. It's like, this is the way the world is. This is the way people talk. That's it. And you can just go along for the ride. As far as things, and I'm sure that turns a lot of people off. I'm sure a lot of people are like, yeah, I'm not going to watch that. That's fine. this movie, first of all, it's gorgeous. It's set in forests and fields. I think he's a master with the camera. It'll be very still sometimes and then get very frantic other times. I actually think I love the way Colin Farrell delivers Yorgos Lanthimos' dialogue in both this and Killing of a Sacred Deer. He's very deadpan. First of all, I love Colin Farrell. I think he's perfect for this. Rachel Weisz the same way. They're very beautiful people, but they can also seem very menacing and sad. It's an interesting mix. I think Colin Farrell in this movie seems like he could be the guy that comes and kills you and also seems like the guy who could watch his girlfriend get robbed in front of him and not do anything about it. Like he really walks that fine line. This movie is very strange, but I love it so much. I can't get enough of the characters, and we're talking about final scenes. I think the final scene in this movie is one of the most haunting scenes that I've ever seen. Not scary, but haunting, and thinking about how I would treat that situation. And you know, Weisz as the narrator in this movie is wonderful. And I'll say it's funny because this and Chip and I's movie, First Reformed, both have a lot of narration, and that's normally something that I really kind of despise in movies. I think it's lazy, but they both do it really well. And I don't know, Lobster, I love that movie.
Narration's one of those things, when it goes right, it goes really right, and when it goes wrong, it can go wrong really easily.
Yeah.
Rounders for me is like an example of where it goes like really right.
Yeah.
It's like, that's one of my, that's, we've talked, that's one it of makes my it favorites. More fun.
Plus it's confusing. Yeah. Like poker's confusing. You kind of need that, like,
you need a guiding light. Yeah. And I think that, you know, I haven't seen The Lobster, based on the premise that you're explaining to me, it feels like you kind of need that guiding hand.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, Evan, that's your number one. Yeah. Let's get into honorable mentions. We're not going to dive too deep into these ones, obviously, because they're honorables. Chip, hit me with your three quick honorables.
All right, let's blaze through these. Enemy. All-time Jake Gyllenhaal performance.
Yep.
He discovers his identical twin in this surreal Canadian landscape. You've got Shoshana Dreyfus from Inglourious Basterds, Melanie Laurent in a great supporting role. I think it's Denis Villeneuve's most underrated English language film. Mm-hmm. Don't watch this movie if you hate spiders. Hate spiders? Stay away from this movie. Next, Locke. Oh my
God. Yeah. I have that on mine.
Perfect. We'll save it for yours then, but it's great.
No. Go hit it. Hit it.
Locke has the three classic elements of a film that was made for me. One, it's a tight 90. All films should either be a massive 3+ hour Irishman style film or a clean trimmed 90. Yes, like, and that's what Locke is.
Chip, you might just be on this podcast every week. I could not agree with you more. 90 minutes is the perfect film unless you're just going to go all out.
Oh my God.
Thank you. Exactly. Next. What's your final one?
Well, it's also, okay, that was my first element. Two, it has Tom Hardy making weird, outlandish acting choices. That's my second key element of a good film. And three, it's entirely in one setting, a car.
Yep. Okay.
TV episodes like that or bottle episodes, movies, different, but it's great. Tom Holland, Andrew Scott, Olivia Colman, phenomenal. Finally, I have The Lighthouse / The Witch. We've kind of touched on both those already. Shout out to Chance on Twitter for wanting to talk about The Witch. Hopefully we did it justice for you. Robert Eggers is a god.
Yeah, hit me up.
Love it.
Chance, hit me up about The Witch, bro. I'll fucking talk about The Witch all day. All right.
My honorable mentions, Mississippi Grind.
Nice.
I think it's Ryan Reynolds' best performance. Yep. What a fucking movie. This is a fun movie. I love poker movies. I love gambling movies. This to me is the spiritual predecessor to Uncut Gems in a way. Mm. Like, obviously, they're completely different stories, but and because they're connected by A24, I love it. Mid-90s.
Oh, good.
Jonah Hill's directorial debut.
Yeah.
It is his love letter to skateboard culture in the mid-90s. And I grew up not being able to skate at all, but playing a lot of Tony Hawk and really wishing I could skate. I bought a couple of skateboards and never could ollie, and then, you know, really burned out quick. But this movie's really good. Also an incredible Luke Hedges performance, which I really, really love. And then my third place is a backslash as well. It's The Lighthouse / Hot Summer Nights. Hot Summer Nights is a super underrated movie. I don't think people talk about it enough. Timothée Chalamet in like really early Chalamet form. I like this movie a lot. It's like a teenage summer high school movie that also turns into like a crime thriller. So fuck yeah, I'm in.
Yeah,
I love it. It's a good movie. All right. Evan, three honorables real quick.
So I'm changing it up right now. You guys mentioned a couple of mine, Moonlight, Uncut Gems. We already talked about that. I'm doing something special. My three, I wanted to give somebody a shout out, and I'm so upset that we didn't get to talk about them. The Lighthouse, High Life, Good Time. Robert Pattinson does great fucking work for A24, guys.
Robert Pattinson does great fucking work for A24.
Yeah.
Good Time is so, I mean, obviously Lighthouse, we've talked about it, but Good Time is such a fucking good, like, it's part of the Patton renaissance, and I'm fucking here for it. The guy's the next big movie star.
Yeah, he is. And he's going to be. He's the next Batman, and he's going to be in Chris Nolan's film Tenet. But
if we ever get to see it.
If we ever get to see it. Well, they're going to get to see it in England.
We're going to pirate the shit out of that.
Yeah, of course.
We're not encouraging pirating. Or if they do happen to show it in some states that COVID is under control, there's potential for a road trip.
We'll see. We'll see. Yeah, maybe.
Montana. Right. We're coming for you.
Yeah, if they're showing it in Montana, we'll head out there. Robert Pattinson, The Lighthouse, obviously, we mentioned that. Good Time, Safdie Brothers movie. Check that out. High Life. Robert Pattinson is alone for about half the movie. I don't know. Have you guys seen High Life?
Yep.
Okay, nice. Yes. I love this movie so much. They always tell actors, you know, don't spend time on screen with a kid. It's very hard, and little babies don't know how to act. He does an excellent job with the child. He's just so freaking good. He's very good. He will take on any role. The camera will linger on him. He's a very, very handsome man. He'll uglify himself.
You know what else they tell actors not to do?
What's that?
Don't be on screen with a kid.
Yep.
And don't be on screen for 2 hours straight with Willem Dafoe.
Right.
Because you'll get blown out of the water. But guess what? The man does both. He's a very confident actor.
He absolutely hung in there. Dude is we're watching a legend, I think, form before our eyes a little bit. Wanted to mention him. So yeah, there it is. There's our top fives.
All right. Really quick. We ran down our honorables. Before we go, give us a rundown of your top five really quick, Chip, just in order.
Yeah. We had First Reformed at number 5, Last Black Man in San Francisco at number 4. We had Moonlight at 3, Lady Bird at 2, and Uncut Gems at number 1.
Gorgeous. All right. And I had Uncut Gems at 5, The Spectacular Now at 4, Moonlight at 3, The Last Black Man in San Francisco at 2, and Lady Bird at number 1.
Nice. All right. Starting at 5, I had Ex Machina, 4, The Witch, 3, First Reformed, 2, Lady Bird, 1, The Lobster.
All right. Those are our top fives. Normally, when we have a guest on this podcast, they will be leaving us for Hot Take Corner because they can't handle the heat. However, Chip is on the hot seat this week.
Yes.
So stay tuned and cue that fire. Okay, welcome to Hot Take Corner, where we say ridiculous things that people don't like Jaws. We don't really get it. I'm never gonna live that one down. This week, special guest, first time ever having a guest on Hot Take Corner. Chip is going to bless us with his hot take about A24 movies. Evan and I were afraid to dive in on a hot take on A24. But Chip was man enough to step up.
Throw him in the fire.
You were hanging me out to dry, but it's okay. I can handle the heat.
Yeah.
Now, this take, I had you in mind, Evan. I'm not going to lie.
Okay.
I think that Robert Eggers is a better director and makes better horror films than Ari Aster.
It's like Evan is fighting with himself. He's so upset right now.
And I know you love them both, clearly as the last hour has proved. Yeah. And I know that you love Midsommar.
Yes.
I think Midsommar is good. I think Hereditary is very good.
Yeah.
I think that Midsommar, Florence Pugh, is the best performance of any Ari Aster film. I think Hereditary is just a better casting top to bottom. I think it's scarier. Mm-hmm. The story holds up a little better. But I think Robert Eggers tells better stories.
Okay.
I think he has more captivating dialogue in his movies. I think he builds to better finales and just like all out light shows in the climax of his movies.
Yeah.
And I think he has better performances than Ari Aster. I think that Ari Aster is very technically skilled. His camera work you can really see in his movies, but I'm Team Eggers on this one.
Yeah.
Wow. That is a true hot take.
I don't know if I can't even remember if I said this at the beginning of top five. I left Midsommar out. That would definitely be in my top five. I left it out because I already talked about it a couple weeks ago. Wow, I'm shook. Okay. I agree.
I have rendered you speechless.
I agree. I agree.
Evan is frying his circuits.
I agree with the whole second half of that about Robert Eggers getting better performances, having better dialogue, all that. I 100% agree. And that's why if you would have said Robert Eggers is a better filmmaker than Ari Aster, I would have 100% hopped on board. I think Robert Eggers can become, you know, we already talked about him a little bit. I think he can become like almost like a Quentin Tarantino type director as far as like legendary dialogue filled movies. As far as straight up horror goes, man, Ari Aster, God, he scares the shit out of me. But, man, I love that take. I don't even know what to say. I
have a question. I have a question.
I
have a question.
Wow, I got.
We're in hot take.
By the way,
is The Lighthouse a horror movie? I don't think it is.
It's horror adjacent.
I like that. I like that.
Being stuck on a rock out in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by raging seas,
and Willem Dafoe farts.
Willem Dafoe and his farts. I agree in that, like, you're not watching like, ooh, I need to cover my eyes, but what it does to you psychologically, it definitely scared me. Like, it definitely horrified me.
Yeah. So I'm gonna refrain from too much because I still haven't seen Midsommar, which I got absolutely reamed for on the 2019 podcast. Eggers, like, what he does in The Lighthouse, I think is fucking super, super special.
Yeah.
And it's a movie that makes you go back like a million times over and try to guess what he's talking about. I've read more articles about The Lighthouse than probably any other movie that I've seen in the last few years where I'm like, what is this about? And every article I read, it like disproves the other article. And I'm like, fuck. All right. So I don't know. I agree with maybe what Evan said is like, I think he's got the ability to be one of those Quentin Tarantino, like true auteur style people in rooms talking.
No doubt. Either way, I'm here for whatever they... Who needs therapy more, Robert Eggers or Ari Aster?
Ari Aster.
So, Eggers. I think Eggers needs more therapy.
The reason that I say that.
Okay.
Robert Eggers very openly and clearly explains, I'm taking these stories from like Greek mythology or biblical stories. And I'm putting my own spin on it. I want to show that you can do it in a contemporary way, you know, with contemporary technology and tell an awesome story. Ari Aster's like, yeah, I dreamed this one night.
Okay. All right. I'm so in on that then.
And that's why I would say, as far as like pure horror goes, I actually agree. You know, Chip, now that I have a second to process, I'm actually with your take that he's a better horror director. The Witch was the scariest movie. I watch a lot of scary movies. The Witch is the most scared I've been after watching a movie in probably 10 years or so, like since I've been an adult. So I'm totally with you there if we want to say that. As far as like going forward down the line, I'm actually looking forward to Robert Eggers getting into other stuff. And I actually hope Ari Aster continues to make horror movies because, like we said, if you can go to bed at night and just think up things like Midsommar and Hereditary, I'm like, Jesus Christ, please keep making those because that's fucking insane. And somebody keep that man locked up somewhere, like just writing. And should we other people, but
I think Robert Eggers should completely pivot and direct our Florence Pugh, Lakeith Stanfield rom-com.
Dude, he would do something crazy with it. I would love to see it.
Yeah. Fuck.
Man. Wow. All right. Take. I love that. So
that is a good take. That is a good take. Chip bringing the heat a week that Evan and I were terrified to be in the hot seat.
Man.
All right. That was Hot Take Corner, everybody. Chip, thank you so much for joining us this week. This was a whole lot of fun.
Thank you.
Whole lot of fun. Thank you to all the listeners out there that listen every week, that, you know, retweet, comment, that subscribe to know when everything's coming. Be sure to follow us. You know, all of us individually, like we said, follow Chip at Chip Off Your Block on Twitter for great movie takes. Next week, we have a very, very, very special episode. I've never seen Boogie Nights. And so we are going to do a first Boogie Nights impression, with me watching it and Evan being like, I can't believe it took you this long to see it. Yeah, so we're diving in deep on Boogie Nights. So if you've never seen it, now's the time to hop on the train. I'm really excited.
Yep. And, you know, I'm super excited too. And before we sign off, Chip, give us the last thought. You hit us with awesome top five, awesome hot take. You know, what do you got? The last 15 seconds, 20 seconds before we sign off. We appreciate you coming on.
Well, thank you for having me. I think that last thought. High Life is the best argument for Robert Pattinson as Batman. He's morose. He's by himself. He looks great. Great jawline. Yes, that's the perfect like Batman. I don't know Matt Reeves, but Matt Reeves saw that and said that's Batman.
Yep. Boom.
Wow. I love that you just are like, you're like 15 seconds. What do I get? Pattinson. Brain. Pattinson take. Yes.
Off the fucking brain. I love it.
Ladies and gentlemen. If you couldn't tell by now, Chip will be fucking back rather than later. He's going to be a very recurring guest on this show whenever we need a true cinephile's opinion on certain movies. So thank you guys so much for listening. We'll see you next time. Thank you to Chip for joining us, and we'll see you next week for Boogie Nights. Till then, we got Travis taking us out.
Thank you, everybody.